It has been 67 years since the enforced expulsion of Palestinians from their homes and for many forced exile in neighboring countries. With the memories of life in Palestine still fresh in many oppressed Palestinians' minds, each year on this day, they and others who stand for the Palestinian cause mark Nakba Day, or the day of the catastrophe of Israel's imposed creation. As the reality of life under occupation receives more coverage, Israel is increasingly becoming more right-wing and hateful, with the Prime Minister needing to vow that he would not allow for a Palestinian state just to win recent elections. In this edition of the debate, we reflect on Palestine on this Nakba Day.
Another anniversary of Nakba Day, or the Day of Catastrophe in Palestine. Every year on May 15th, thousands of Palestinians take to the streets to commemorate the tragedy inflicted upon them some 67 years ago. The Nakba refers to the creation of Israel and mass displacement of Palestinians in 1948. An estimated 750,000 Palestinians were immediately exiled or fled from their lands in Palestine. Some were subjected to brutal massacres at the hands of the Israeli Zionists, while others fled to neighboring Arab countries. That day, 67 years ago, also marked the beginning of the world's largest refugee crisis.
Nakba, which actually is better described as Zionism's ethnic cleansing of Palestine, only started all those years ago. Actually, in 1947, nearly a year before Israel declared itself to be in existence.
Many Palestinians marked the occasion wearing black clothing, holding large keys and waving black flags. On Friday, a series of protests and marches followed noon prayers throughout the occupied West Bank and the Gaza Strip. But as usual, some of the rallies were violently attacked by Israeli forces.
Israel failed to understand that there is no peace with the occupation and that the Palestinian people are seeking their land and their rights. And what happened in 1948 will never, ever be repeated.
Israel has been an unwelcome entity in the Middle East and beyond since its inception. Despite criticism, Tel Aviv has been grabbing more and more land from Palestinians to build settlements which are illegal under international law. The Israeli regime has also waged numerous wars on regional nations during this period, leaving a trail of deaths and destruction. The most recent Israeli target was the Gaza Strip, which witnessed weeks of deadly Israeli aerial and ground attacks last year. Already under a crippling Israeli blockade, Gazans are still reeling from the wound inflicted by the 50-day war. Will the nightmare of Palestinians come to an end anytime soon? And who should be blamed for the Israeli atrocities? It is a well-known fact that the creation of Israel was part of the 20th century power game and a plot hatched by the West. However, many Muslims around the world are critical of the international community, including Arab states, for their silence on the suffering of Palestinians.
More than 7 million Palestinian refugees living, or rather scattered all over the world, living in miserable conditions in miserable camps.
Millions of Palestinians are now living outside their homeland due to the Israeli occupation. Still, Palestinians say they remain hopeful and determined to continue resistance against Tel Aviv's continued policy of land grab, killings and settlement expansion. All the crimes have been continuing since the Nakba Day.
Let's now introduce our guest for this edition of the debate. We're joined by Mr. Paul Larudi, who is the co-founder of the Free Palestine Movement, and he is joining us live from Berkeley, California. And we're also joined by Ms. Carol Gould, who is an author and political commentator, and she is joining us live from London. Thank you both for joining us for this edition of the debate. Ms. Gould, I'd like to start with you, if I may. How do you reflect on this Nakba Day, 67 years after the creation of Israel and the subsequent destruction of the Palestinian homeland, as well as the mass eviction of Palestinians?
Well, I don't see it as a mass destruction. First of all, you have to look at history. The Zionist movement began in the 19th century when there was unprecedented anti-Semitism in Europe, particularly in Eastern Europe and in Russia. And the Zionist movement began with Theodor Herzl, who was a secular Jew. He was not religious. And it was the Dreyfus trial in France that really brought the plight of the Jews to world's attention. And a very famous screed called J'accuse, which explained anti-Semitism to the world. And there was a movement for the Jews to have a homeland, as we know. I don't need to tell your guests this. I'm teaching my grandmother to suck eggs, as the expression goes here. And it was originally thought to be a socialist movement where Jewish people would come to Palestine and they would start farms and agricultural enterprises and then eventually have a small homeland. But then, of course, came the Nazi Holocaust. And so in the context of that period of time, World War II and the Holocaust, the establishment of a state for the Jewish people was speeded up. I don't see it as some kind of Western conspiracy. It was meant with the best of intentions by Europe, by the world, after this horrendous genocide against the Jews of 6 million dead. Unfortunately, over the past 67 years, there have been wars, there's been war after war after war. But lest we forget, it is not an apartheid state. There are 1.2 million Muslims living inside Israel. They have their own schools, they have their mosques, they have enterprises, they have businesses, and they live side by side with Jewish Israelis. So it isn't a tragedy for them. They're the ones who stayed behind, and they actually have probably the best life of any people in that region right now, because all of the other countries are in terrible turmoil, are internecine tribal strife, unprecedented violence in the surrounding countries. So there's the good and the bad out of this event. And of course, you mentioned the Gaza campaign. You didn't mention that Israelis were being attacked from Gaza, not just for months, but for years. And any country being attacked will retaliate. And Netanyahu is the kind of prime minister who will retaliate in a big way. Yitzhak Rabin, the prime minister who wanted a total peace, used to say, "I turn the other cheek. I just move on. When there's a terrorist attack, we move on and we try to make peace." But we have a different regime in Israel now. And that's a reality that we can't get away from. He's just been reelected. And that is how I see it.
Okay, Ms. Gold, I do appreciate your insight. I will get back to you. I do apologize for interrupting you. I want to get Mr. Larudi in here. Mr. Larudi, you heard there the other point of view in this debate. I want to get your feelings on this Nakba Day, though.
Well, it's a very interesting theory of history. It sounds actually more like a Mother Goose tale and a form of fiction. There's no doubt that Jews were persecuted in Europe, but is that a license to persecute Palestinians and to expel them and to do an ethnic cleansing of the non-Jewish population of Palestine? I don't think so. In fact, you would think that people who have suffered the way the Jews have would not want to impose suffering on other people. More than half of the population of the non-Jewish population of Palestine has been expelled by a deliberate plan that goes back to the 19th century. They wanted the non-Jews to be removed. And they're succeeding day by day. Of course, the big one was 1967. That's why I'm wearing this in commemoration of one of the great genocides of the last century or two. The fiction that Arabs and Jews are living side by side, yeah, they're living side by side. One is living on one side of the wall, and the other is living on the other side of the wall. And meanwhile, the wall is being moved in order to get the non-Jewish Palestinians farther and farther away and into smaller and smaller areas. That's the entire objective. I mean, it's just continuing ethnic cleansing. What you're listening to from Carol Gold is mythology.
Ms. Gold, I'll give you the chance to respond, and I just want to throw this in there because I do want to talk about the details, if we may, as well. Resolution 181, which is also called the Partition Plan, explicitly called for the formation of a separate Palestinian state. But, you know, we're here now 67 years later with Israel ever encroaching, and I mean, I would imagine you can even admit that, onto Palestinian lands, a total takeover, many people would say, of all Palestinian lands. What went wrong?
I'm not going to answer that. I want to respond to what your guest just said. First of all, the Jews didn't arrive in 1948 and start massacring people. The minute the state was declared, all of the surrounding Arab countries declared war on the new state of Israel. There was a war, the 1948 war, and there was a great deal of death, yes, on both sides. Did you expect the new Israelis to just sit there and say, "Yes, well, kill us all"? That's what war is all about. And the second thing, this business about
the new Israelis came in and started expelling Palestinians all the time.
Excuse me, may I finish? I was asked a question by the moderator.
They didn't. It was not an invasion by any of the Arab states. It was the Zionists who first spent months expelling the Palestinian population. They spent months doing that. The Arab states didn't enter until May of 1948, and already 6 months of expulsion, 5 months of expulsions had already happened.
A
third of the Palestinian
war.
Population had been expelled
them.
From their homes.
They didn't need to declare war. Now, the second thing is you mentioned the wall.
They did nothing. They sat on their hands. They didn't even do very much preparation after the UN resolution went through.
After
the UN resolution went through, they didn't know what the reaction was going to be. They didn't know what to expect. They didn't attack anyone. They didn't attack anyone. Instead, they were attacked by Zionist forces in as early as December of 1947, and the expulsions began at that time. There was Plan D, Plan Dalet, if you like, in Hebrew. And Plan Dalet was what? It was for the expulsion. What did Ben Gurion say? We have to capitalize on the opportunity that's afforded to us when there's chaos and we can form a Jewish state, but we don't want half of our population to be non-Jewish, so we have to expel them.
It was no intention whatsoever to have perpetual war. And that is what has happened for 67 years. And every war
wanted a quick war, and they wanted to get the Palestinians, they wanted to get them out of there
Nasser wanted to annihilate all the Jews and annihilate Israel. That has always been the intention of the surrounding states.
He never said he wanted to annihilate the Jews.
He said he
wanted to restore the Palestinians to their homes.
What about the wall? You mentioned the wall, and you said Jews and Arabs don't live together. I'm sorry, that is not true, because I have lived in Israel. And I was a member of Peace Now.
It is absolutely true. Even in the cities,
even in the so-called mixed cities in Israel, in Tel Aviv,
I do appreciate that you want to get your word in. I just want Ms. Gould to finish her thoughts, and I will get back to you, I promise. Go ahead, Ms. Gould.
Yes, because you did ask me a question. You asked me a question. And my answer to you is that what I said before, that this has been 67 years of unfortunate bloodletting on both sides, that the one person who did want to bring peace, Yitzhak Rabin, was assassinated, and sadly, by a Jewish extremist. That I totally accept as one of the most unfortunate things to happen in the history of the region. But unfortunately now, the Israelis want more than anything bitachon. They want security. And sadly, I know how much you hate the wall, but there's been such a huge reduction in terrorist attacks since the wall went up. And that is a fact. So there is the good and the bad, as I said before. You know, Israel has more symphony orchestras than all the countries in Africa and the Middle East combined. Tel Aviv has just been named the most gay-friendly city in the world. It is a democracy. You can walk down the street if you're gay with your girlfriend or boyfriend, and nobody does anything to you. For the most part, it's one of the freest press, that is the most free press in the world. The media are completely free, and it is a tremendous democracy with great things going for it.
Not for Palestinians.
Yes, they teach it. Israeli they're teaching there.
It is not for Palestinians.
Palestinian
citizens of Israel can't
allowed to speak.
Palestinian citizens of Israel can't even get married to Palestinian citizens in the West Bank and bring their spouse into Israel. They can't do it. They can't. Israel doesn't allow these spouses to become Israeli citizens.
Openly, these things are discussed openly on Israeli television,
who cares
on Israeli
whether they're discussed
radio,
openly?
In
it
a dynamic society
it doesn't
by
make
the
a
left,
bit of difference.
Who,
It doesn't make a bit of difference.
It will make a bit of difference because
lovely,
Israelis are always trying to change things.
Your lovely idyllic Israeli society, in your lovely idyllic Israeli society, 93% of the land of what is internationally considered Israel is off limits to housing for its Arab citizens. It's part of the Israel Lands Authority, which has the authority only to use it for Jews. The remaining 7% consists of the tiny areas where the 20% of Palestinian citizens of Israel live in crowded conditions where they're not given permission to build larger units, and even the small amount of agricultural land that they have, even that is slowly being confiscated. That's where they're expected to live in about 2.5 to 3% of the land.
If you both allow me, I do apologize. I do appreciate that this debate is, and this is a heated topic. I do appreciate that. But I just want to come in here, and if I may, Mr. Rudy, I want to speak about, you know, when it comes to accountability, a lot of people would say, at least on this side, I would say that, that Israel is not held accountable for its actions, that in many senses it is seen as above the law. How do you feel about that? Ms. Gold, I will get back to you for an answer on that as well. Mr. Lurie, go ahead.
Well, accountability to whom? Accountability to their own Jewish population, I would say even that is not very good, but accountability to the international community. If you consider the international community to be the United States and Western Europe and Australia and a few other countries like that, then perhaps there's some accountability, but accountability to the law and to the world, and accountability for ethnic cleansing and genocide and expulsion of the Palestinian population. There's no accountability for that. You know, it's U.S. law. It's U.S. law and policy for Israel not to expand its settlements or even to establish settlements and to redo them. But what does the U.S. do about it? If they want accountability on that, they should stop funding Israel and even blockade Israel or whatever. They need to enforce it, but they don't. They just give Israel absolutely everything it wants, and they allow Israel. They're encouraging Israel to commit international crimes against humanity.
Ms. Gold, I wanted to get your opinion on that. I just wanted to clarify, you know, I am talking about, of course, international accountability. And I'm wondering, you know, certainly it does seem in many, many cases that Israel is seen as above the law, because there is firstly, obviously, the fear that anybody criticizing Israel will be labeled an anti-Semite from the get-go. So that label gets stuck onto anybody who talks about anything that Israel has ever done wrong. So I mean, that then blocks any conversation of Israel being held accountable, does it not?
No, it does not. Certainly not here in Britain. There is tremendous debate. There is energetic debate. There's George Galloway. There are many, many people who discuss and criticize Israel openly in the West, in Europe. There's the BDS movement led by Omar Barghouti. There is a tremendous amount of criticism all around the world, and it is not always considered anti-Semitism. Now, there's one point I want to make. It was mentioned early in the program, Israel was getting rid of non-Muslims, they don't want anybody except Jews living there. Israel is the safest country in the region for Christians. Canon Andrew White was the vicar of Baghdad. He had to leave recently because it was too dangerous for him. And where is he living now? He's living in Israel. And it is a very safe place for Christians, while Christians are being decimated in all the surrounding countries. Never has there been a more terrible time for Christians in Africa and the Middle East. And Israel is the one safe place for them.
So the price
in that
tag
region.
Attacks,
and I want
the price
to correct
tag attacks
that.
On churches and mosques, you call that safety for Palestinian Christians?
I didn't hear the question. There was interference on the line.
All right, I do apologize for interrupting both of you at this heated point of the conversation. Unfortunately, we do just for a second have to go and listen to some of our viewer comments. Our viewers have been taking part in this discussion as well. Let's listen to some of those comments, and we'll be right back to this debate.
Because Israel is a private gated community for the American elite. Because Israel is the means to control Middle East and demonize Islam. Because USA supports them. They are Zionist terrorists. Anybody who really wants to know the real story should watch Al Nakba, then come back and let us know if you have learned anything. Because Zionism rules most of the world through fraudulent debt slavery. Most Western politicians sold their soul to this decades ago. Thus, people like Tony Abbott say that Israel is a friend of Australia. Because Israel is not the problem. Rather, it is you Muslims that is the problem. Because they are parts of the United States, and United States is the leader of the hypocritical elements that rule the world today. Because they control every element of power in the West, Hollywood, banks, media, governments, etc. Because Muslims are never ready to unite for a common cause. Yeah, it's obvious the world has gone a stage of oppression and exploitation of human dignity, and Israel is doing that. European guilt and Zionists in America, France, England, and America and France veto powers at Security Council.
Just some of our viewer comments as posted on our social media pages. I want to get back to the debate now. Mr. Larudi, I'm wondering at this point, a question I asked you earlier about accountability. Many people would say, for example, on international law, which you spoke about as well, that there is no accountability when it comes to Israeli crimes. How do you feel about going forward? Will there ever be such accountability, at least in those people's eyes who do see these as crimes of international law?
The arc of history is long, but it bends towards justice. There will be accountability. I don't know whether it'll be next year or 10 years from now or 100 years from now. But these crimes will be redeemed. And there will be an end to the racist state of Israel. The world has not tolerated a racist state anywhere on a permanent basis, and the idea that a Jewish state in Palestine constitutes justice for all of its citizens, that's nonsense. The whole state was founded on a racist concept. The United States is not considered a white state, but there was a white state in South Africa. It doesn't exist anymore. Sooner or later, there will be a reckoning, and there will be no Jewish state in Palestine.
Okay, Ms. Gold, I'll give you the final word there. How do you feel about accountability for Israeli crimes? Is it even possible? Because we've had this discussion already. You said that there is criticism, but what about actual accountability in international courts under international law?
I don't regard it as crimes. Israel is a nation. It is defending itself. It's been defending itself for 67 years on a war after war after war. They were attacked on Yom Kippur, the holiest day of the year, by its surrounding states. And I also totally reject your guest's idea that the Jewish state will not exist. How would your viewers like it if I said, in about a year's time, Pakistan will no longer exist? That was created to be a state for the Muslims, and there's been terrible bloodshed. There was a million people died during partition between India and Pakistan. But I would never call for the end of any of these states. And I find it abhorrent what your guest has just said, that the Jewish state, one little Jewish state, and how many Muslim and Christian countries around the world? I'm sorry, I still believe there's room in the world for the Jewish state, for Israel, where all of its citizens have freedom to move about and to live together, of all faiths. That I totally support. I would never want to think of it as just a Jewish state. It should be of all faiths.
All right, we will have to leave it there at that point.
I do apologize
for interrupting you again. But of course, we do appreciate both of you joining us for this edition of the debate and both your contributions, of course. That was Ms. Carol Gould, author and political commentator, who had been speaking to us live from London. And we were also joined by Mr. Paul Larudi, co-founder of the Free Palestine Movement, and he had been speaking to us live from Berkeley, California. And of course, viewers, we appreciate your comments as posted on our social media pages, as well as, of course, watching. Until next time, good night.